What is your favorite image of Jesus? There's so many representations of Jesus in our world. I can't think of any rural southern Sunday school room that was not adorned with a picture of a fair-skinned Jesus, either surrounded by a flock of happy children walking down a dusty road, or kneeling with his hands palms together, fingers vertical position in prayer, with his eyes piously and devotedly gazing into heaven. Of course, there's the Jesus of the lilies in the depiction that's so prominently and beautifully displayed in our stained glass window behind the altar. Perhaps that's your favorite. It's comforting for many of us. Several years ago, someone gave me a small collection of 4 to 6 drawings of Jesus, which depict him in various situations, holding infants or playing with children. And in these drawings, Jesus looks unusually happy. The piercing seriousness that is so often found in his eyes is not present in these drawings. As a matter of fact, Jesus appears to be downright playful in those scenes. He almost seems overcome with joy. I like those images a lot. I like the idea that Jesus enjoyed life, hard though it often was for him. Taxing as it frequently was, challenging as life is. I like imagining Jesus' smile. I want Jesus to be pleased, to be happy, not always stressed and disappointed. I think too often we picture Jesus as stressed and disappointed by those around him, and mostly by us. Sometimes we should probably think of Jesus as being happy and enjoying the beauty of nature and the presence of good friends, and maybe even a good meal and a glass of wine. He was fully human, after all. We should not forget that. In her book, An Altar in the World, Barbara Brown Taylor describes her encounter with an image of Jesus in a stained glass window in an Episcopal church at which she was the guest speaker, and of course, it was in Alabama. She described the encounter this way. Since I was 40 minutes early, I had the place to myself, except for a member of the altar guild who was polishing silver in the sacristy. She was the kind of woman who helped me feel inadequate simply by being so pulled together. "Hey," I said. "Hey," the perfectly polite woman said. Then she went back to polishing the silver, and I went back to checking out the church. Once I had adjusted the height of the microphone, I walked up behind the altar so I could see the mural up close. It was a real masterpiece. Did John Singer Sargent do altar pieces? Above my head, Jesus was stepping out of his tomb, looking as limber as a ballet dancer, with his arms raised in a blessing. Roman soldiers slumped in sleep on either side of the tomb, with Easter lilies blooming under their noses. Except for a white cloth swaddling his waist, Jesus was naked. His skin was the color of a pink rose. His limbs were flooded with light. The painting was so realistic, I leaned in for a closer look. I could not remember ever having seen so much of Jesus' skin before, especially in church. I felt protective of him, all exposed like that in such a public place, but I could see the artist's point. Even in Jesus' most transcendent moment that set him apart from the rest of humankind, he remained recognizably one of us. He came back wearing skin. He did not leave his body behind. In his presence, I felt overdressed, overdefended. What was I hiding? What did he have that I was missing? Something was missing in the painting as well, but I could not think what it was. The wounds in his feet, his hands, and his sides were clear but not gory. His upraised arms looked thin but strong. Staring at his underarms, I realized with a start why he looked so ethereal. Jesus had no body hair. "It's beautiful, isn't it?" the pulled-together woman in the sacristy was watching me through the open door. It surely is that, I said. But did you notice that he has no body hair? He has the underarms of a 6-year-old. His chest is as smooth as a peach. Her manicured fingers stopped moving, and the smile froze on her face. I can't believe you're saying this to me, she said without moving her red lips. I just can't believe you're saying this to me. Barbara Brown Taylor goes on to describe her frequent descents into oafdom, her repetitive forays in saying the wrong thing at the wrong time, which is obviously not the point of her sharing this experience. For Barbara Brown Taylor, it is important that we recognize the reality of the incarnation, the bodily reality of Christ as a real, fully human male, body hair and all. Perhaps the image of Jesus that each of us finds the most affirming or engaging is primarily revealing about us. Today we have Jesus describing himself as a gate or a door. His way up to something in this definition. The image of Jesus as a door or a gate, he describes himself not as the thing, but the way to the thing, which is God. And in a literary sense, this image works, but in a visual way, not so much. A door is a fascinating descriptor, especially in Jewish understanding at the time of Jesus. A door or a doorway is liminal. It's dangerous, just as shellfish are dangerous. A doorway or threshold or gate is not one place or the other. If you're in a gateway or a threshold, you are not in one room or the other. You're in between. If you're a shellfish or an animal with a cloven hoof or a fish that doesn't swim or a bird that doesn't fly, you are a combination of things, not one or the other. And in Jewish understanding, you are therefore unclean. In a gateway or in a doorway or through the door or gate, anything can happen. These animals and these places are uncertain. They are mysterious. They are not easily conformed into nice, neat packages. And with that understanding, it comes as no surprise that Jesus describes himself as a door or a gate. He's not pointing to himself as the end, the stopping point, but as mysterious, uncontrollable, or nailed down to a way to which he points, which is God. This Sunday, Good Shepherd Sunday, our college describes Jesus as the Good Shepherd. And in all three lectionary years on this Sunday, the readings are taken from the 10th chapter of John's Gospel, describing in differing ways Jesus' role with his sheep. Year B begins with Jesus saying, "I am the Good Shepherd." That's pretty clear, unless you read it in Greek. And you see that that I am statement, which is prevalent in John's Gospel, is this, ego and me. The same I am words that God gave Moses in Exodus, when Moses asked God to name himself. I am. God is. We, Jesus and God, are both the Good Shepherd. And that's probably my favorite image of Jesus, the one I have etched in my mind with Jesus with the sheep over his shoulders, carrying it along the way. Part of that has to do with the time my children spent in a class called Catechesis of the Good Shepherd in their formative years in the Episcopal Church in Louisiana. And part of it has to do with my awareness of needing to be carried a great deal of the time. I also like the fact that Jesus refers to us as sheep. I think that reference is generous. I didn't used to. In the past, I was a bit offended when I read references to the followers of Christ being like sheep, because sheep are notoriously not very bright. In fact, they're downright dumb. They merely follow a leader, not ever thinking for themselves or questioning the wisdom of their own judgment or even that of the leader. I found that bothersome. I'm no sheep. I value my thought processes and my own wisdom. And therein lies the problem. When Jesus refers to us as sheep, he is giving us credit to hear and respond to his voice, to know that his judgment is wise and that we should follow him. I think in reality, we tend to be less like sheep and more like cats. Have you ever tried to get a cat to do what you want? If you have, you know what I'm talking about. Cats tend to be wise and aloof, certain and sure. It has been said that they don't have owners but servants, and I believe that that's true. They certainly don't have shepherds. Perhaps we need to relinquish our need to be like cats and be more like sheep. Perhaps we need to retune our ears to hear the voice of the Good Shepherd, the one who calls us each by name. And rather than wandering off to follow our own fancy, follow that voice. What is the image of Jesus to you?